Hello and welcome to the Art is Hard podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Seiler. I've got a really good episode for you guys this week. I've been busy all week recording more interviews to give myself a little bit of a buffer. But I'm excited because they've all been those episodes where the guests and I really get into it. And that whole thing started with this episode. So I'm excited for you guys to hear it. But first, a little business. I want to once again say thank you to my Patreon patrons for showing their support. If you haven't gotten your sticker, it should be arriving soon. But in the meantime, I'd like to shout out Ian Smith and my dad for being the two wonderful people who have given me a portion of their hard-earned cash to help support this thing. So thank you again. If you'd like to have me heap praise all over you and support the podcast, the best way to do that is by becoming a patron on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/artishardpodcast and subscribe, you'll get extra perks such as the aforementioned shout out or a sticker. And you'll get early access to the ad-free version of the show, so you can skip over this whole hustle I've got going on here and get to the good stuff right away. So check out patreon.com/artishardpodcast and subscribe. The other way to help me make this thing happen is by going to artishardpodcast.com, which is the best place to find, you know, older episodes, merch, anything podcast related. And while you're there, if you scroll down to the very bottom of the page or click the support tab in the top, you'll see a little Amazon button. Clicking this will take you to the Amazon homepage, and if you buy something, I'll get a little kickback from Amazon. So maybe you're like me and you have your eye on some guitar wall hangers. That'll help me find a spot for all the various instruments lying around my place. Just click through that little button before you buy, and you'll really be helping me out. So this week I had the good fortune to be joined by Cameron, Alex, and Deacon from the local Phoenix area black metal, black gaze band, Nulling Roots, a band which my band has performed with on several occasions, and you know they're a good group of dudes, and I'm glad I got to sit down and chat with them. We get into exactly what black gaze is and how it relates to black metal, as well as how black metal has evolved and continues to evolve to this day, and kind of the resistance and acceptance given that situation. We also talk about how the band started from a one-man studio project into a full-fledged band, and then how the band creates, keeping that in mind. It was a really good one, especially because they were gracious enough to bring me a 16-ounce Modelo Chelada, which I enjoyed throughout the episode. So, anyway, without further ado, here is episode 10 of the Art is Hard podcast, Cameron, Alex, and Deacon of Nulling Roots. So we are here. We've got some Coors. We've got a Cerveza Modelo Gelada, yes. Tamarindo Picante. And have a little chat and a little drink. I'm here with the Nulling Roots guys. So why don't we just start out? If you guys can kind of just give a basic overview of kind of how the band started, kind of how you guys evolved towards where you guys are now.
All right. First, I'm Cameron, the guitarist and vocalist. And we are Nulling Roots, black gaze post-black band from Tempe/Phoenix, Arizona. I started this project by myself in California, in Los Angeles County, 2014. And I released, I released two albums by myself. And then I moved here and I didn't know fucking anyone, literally zero people. So, and I thought, okay, I'll just make this into a band that then I'll just meet people. And then I met Deacon from Craigslist.
Yeah,
pretty quickly. And quickly after that, we met Alex and... Through Craigslist as well. And yeah, that's when we started jamming. And only like within the first couple of month... within the first month of jamming, we already played like our first show. And then we were playing pretty actively after only jamming for such a short amount of time. But yeah, ever since then, we've just been playing around here. We have not toured yet, but that's on the radar.
In the radar. Very nice. So I guess tell me a little bit about starting. So you mentioned that you started as a solo solo project, which I feel like a lot of stuff is starting that way these days, where it's kind of like everyone has the capability to record to a certain degree of like professional level in like their bedroom or their, you know, some, a lot of people have a little home studio or something like that. And so I feel like a lot of projects are getting started as like a single person. What kind of motivates you to start, and what was the sort of spark that sort of lit the flame?
Getting equipment myself, like a DAW. I use Cubase. Once I had that myself and I didn't have to rely on an engineer, for instance, and have to like fork over money. Mm-hmm. Once I took the matter into my own hands, like, okay, I can put out shit like pretty regularly and often. So once I made music by myself, that's when people started noticing, this guy makes music. Like before, I just made no recordings. Mm-hmm. So that made him a name for myself.
Nice. So I guess kind of going from that, as you kind of were evolving as an artist and kind of looking to expand it once you moved here, talk to me a little bit about how you guys kind of collaborate with that in mind. So coming from a solo artist to a full band.
Well, with that said, it was very fortunate that I met Deacon, because he knows a ton of people around here.
Yep.
He knows like all the local bands. I, again, knew no one, so I knew zero of the bands. Alex, he's new to Arizona as well. He's from California. Mm-hmm. He knew some people before me. He's jammed with a band, Exestation, before. Mm-hmm.
Sick band. Yeah. Exestation.
Yeah. But, the question was...
Oh, well, do you guys just kind of... How do you approach your songwriting now that it's... Because for me, just speaking from my own experience, whenever I write songs, I try to do all of it at once and then show people. And as a result of that, I become very possessive over the song.
Yes.
And it's hard. It's one thing to like open up to collaboration with other people and hear those other ideas. So I was just curious as to how you guys kind of approached that as you were becoming a full band.
Yeah. One thing I think is the same with this band that has been since the beginning is Cameron has always been a driving force in like making sure there was always new material coming. And for the most part, Alex and Cameron, they live together, so they get to work on guitar stuff and, you know, they take leads on really forming songs. Mm-hmm. And when I get them, I even have a built-in, you know, soundscape for drums that I have to go off of. So it's actually, we can learn these songs on our own time and then get together and like really kind of flesh them out.
The kind of like formula we've fallen into is Cameron and I like individually write songs and then show them to each other. And then we'll like present them to Deacon, and then he'll put his own drums over them.
Nice.
Yeah, we kind of have like our own songs and stuff.
Okay. Do you guys find that beneficial, like being roommates and being able to hear songs develop and evolve?
Definitely.
And kind of getting, you're like, you kind of hear them, you know, you're walking through the house, you hear someone.
You can always
like,
hear it through the walls, so it makes you want to just like work on it all
That's
the time.
Interesting. Yeah,
yeah, it's, I don't think we could have, not saying like we're like a big band or anything, but like we wouldn't be to the level that we are if me and Alex did not live together. I'd say with full confidence.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is it seems like, I mean, you guys are pretty prolific for being a band since 2014, for 4 years.
Thank you.
I mean, you guys have, I was looking at it earlier, let me step away from the mic here. We've got,
There's a lot of shit out there, man. Yeah. Like, even before Alex and I joined the band, I felt like,
yeah, there was like,
the Alex heard of Nolan Roots, and I think you said you saw the ad on Craigslist. And then when I saw the ad on Craigslist and saw like, oh, there's already three, like, in a fourth album coming out now within, like, 2 years, and they're all really good songs.
Well, so how do you guys kind of approach that? Being so prolific and being, like, having, a lot of ideas and being able to write them down. And especially the other thing with you guys is specifically, I guess we should preface this by saying, talk a little bit about what genre you guys fit into. I mean, I hate to say, like, oh, what genre are you guys? But, like, I feel like there's some people who listen to the podcast who might not be familiar with this type of like metal or black metal or even black metal to begin with.
we play post black metal, just mainly just like kind of standard black metal, but just a little happier chords and a lot of like shoegazy like guitar work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would say like that's like the characteristic that delineates it from black metal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I feel like black metal is definitely a very like. well, there's, you know, everyone tries to be all true or whatever, and they're like, yeah. Oh, yeah, it can't sound like blah, 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 blah.
But we're trying to also just, like, I think, introduce more aggressive parts, too.
Mm. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
More heavy stuff, because there's a lot of pretty post-black metal already. Yeah. So
that's true. I think, and I think that's a neat juxtaposition, because that's one of the things I like about you guys and that genre as a whole, is that it takes something that's like very, it is very aggressive, especially in the drumming with its, you know, for anyone who can, wants to go listen, you can check out Milling Roots on Bandcamp and Spotify. But the drums and the it's all tremolo and very fast and very, you know, chaotic. But in the same sense, it's also, like you said, it has more of like a lush feeling to it, which I think is a nice juxtaposition between the two ideas of being sort of this kind of happy or lush or I mean, almost like more romantic in a sense. Mm-hmm, and then it's juxtaposed against this heavy, aggressive vibe. And I think those two things are sort of like this dual thing that both work together. But yeah, so you guys have like, I'm counting here. There's one, two, three, four. And then, so Voices was when you guys started playing all together, right?
Yes, that's our first recording with not just me.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, so that was a collaborative effort. And then we actually had Alex Behor of This Will Destroy You.
Oh, nice.
He's the drummer for, used to be the drummer for that band, and he's the one that mixed it and put it together.
That's it. Yeah. Well, but that, I mean, so we've got four albums here before you guys are a band, so.
Yeah, we went to a Shoegaze Lord
for
the touch on that song. We wanted to be good for our first song coming out as a band.
And then now you guys have Into the Gray, which you guys released, well, how long ago was that? That was last year sometime.
November 17th, yeah.
That's right.
It's a dark day.
That was a good one. So tell me, kind of going back off of this idea of collaborating as a group rather than just a solo artist, the one thing I wanted to kind of get at was, in this genre, it's not uncommon to have very long songs and drawn out songs, to where it's almost like putting yourself into sort of like a trance, or like some sort of like, it's keeps going and it keeps building and building and building and feeling. So how do you guys approach that from a collaboration sense, in terms of like, as you're showing each other ideas, how do you find those ideas fitting together, and how do you guys express that to everyone else in the band?
Well, I think the writing process ever since Deacon and Alex joined has not really changed too much. Like, it's kind of like how we were saying earlier, me and Alex just like write each other's own songs and then we show them each other. So like, I'm kind of have the same approach, and he's has the same approach as well, just his own song. So mm-hmm. It hasn't really changed, like the writing dynamic changed. It has not since becoming a full band. So it's surprisingly the same still.
Yeah, one thing that I think is new, and it's also new for me in this band in particular, is we're actually collaborating on lyrics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, that's true.
You know, I throw some stuff out there and they throw stuff out there for their songs, and then, you know, we just pick from the lot of what seems to fit the scenery the most. So it's not like just one person is guiding the overall lyricism or kind of view that you're getting from the song. It's like all of us together kind of just throwing like a bunch of sadness and it gets blended together, which I think is pretty new, because most bands have someone that is like the designated person on that front.
Yeah,
so we all have like a little touch in it.
Yeah, that's definitely also an interesting like subject to kind of broach as a band, because it's like everyone has their own thing that they sort of bring to the band.
Yeah,
and then when
people
start stepping into other people's areas, it can sometimes create conflict, but sometimes it comes, you know, it you come out with something that's a little bit more interesting or different than what you would have expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never done that before. I've been in a lot of bands, and there's never been a band I've been in where it's a collaborative thing. And none of us have ever done rap, so it kind of feels like rap, but it's metal.
I guess we all kind of like want to write about the same subject matter, so it just kind of naturally works.
So kind of going on that, where do you guys pull from as far as your, both from a lyrical stance, but on also from a musical stance? What are the sort of things that you guys find inspiration with, and what are your kind of motivations going in for each song?
Weed is my inspiration. Honestly, it might not be that satisfying of an answer, but I wrote the first three albums that I wrote by myself, I did not smoke, and I don't like them nearly as much as my new stuff.
Yeah.
So that's where my inspiration comes from.
I just like escapist everything, like music and TV shows. So
yeah.
That's just kind of like how I write too.
Yeah. It's definitely, and I think this is it's a genre and a style that definitely fits that, because it's sort of, it's almost like you're like, the way I like to think of it is, it's like you're sort of like taking a bath in
music. Oh man, thanks.
And like, and just sort of letting it sort of envelop you. I would like, this is the kind of music that I feel like you could listen to inside of a sensory deprivation tank or something like that. Nice. Where you just have to sit there and just like think and be like,
that would be gnarly.
Yeah. I feel like I kind of want to do that now.
Go for it. We'll pay for it, man.
That'll be an extra.
You come back and talk about it. It'll be awesome.
Okay, so saw some stuff about myself inside the tank that I don't know if I like anymore.
Dude, hopefully it's just so fucking black in there. Like, you don't talk about black anything.
But so kind of, well, that's interesting that you brought up that, you know, obviously the external stimuli of marijuana. Because we had another person on this podcast who similarly was in a, you know, he's in a stoner doom band, so it kind of goes with the territory. Yeah, Jeff Owens. So I guess if you guys could kind of speak on that, you know, obviously as much as you feel comfortable speaking about it, but how does it influence you? And how does it like open you up to different channels of of coming up with ideas?
Yeah, it's way more of a guitarist perspective than anything else, but it's just way easier to write riffs. But as far as like just like the overall sound, my influence for that, or like motivation, I don't know the right word to use, but I like sad music. Mm-hmm. But I get really bored of writing only like one genre, so like I like having the soft and the heavy within the songs. So like growing up, I was way into melodic death metal, mm-hmm. for instance, for the same reason I like post black. I like to write songs with varying volatile emotions, mm-hmm. sort of.
A little bit more dynamic than just something. Yeah. Well, that's one of the issues I feel like that traditional black metal kind of has, is it's not, it can tend to be not very dynamic. It's at times it can be kind of a one trick pony. And it, you know, it's like, how many black metal bands have you heard that are like lo-fi and then, you know, screeching, you know, tape recorded guitars and stuff like that, which is, you know, it was good. It was interesting at the time, but then I feel like some people try to like,
got better.
Yeah.
And it can sound better.
And it's just, I feel like it's a genre that it benefits from change. I feel like there's so many interesting like variations on black metal coming out now or in the past, like, you know, 20 years that didn't exist, you know, if you only listen to the same Dark Throne album.
Well, it's interesting. I learned a thing today about black metal that I didn't realize, is that there is a uncanny parallel universe to categorizing it like they do ska.
Because
there's first wave black metal where you're talking like Venom and Merciful Fate and, you know, like the late 70s, 80s bands that really started it. And then they call it the second wave, where you get Mayhem and, you know, Dark Throne and all the Norwegian and Swedish stuff.
Church Burning.
Yeah. And now we're in the third wave.
Okay.
Which a lot of people kind of don't dig, but that's where we're at, according to people who really break it down.
Yeah, it's really hit and miss.
Yeah, which is Deaf Heaven and Wolves in the Throne Room and bands like that, you know, and Oathbreaker and stuff.
It's funny. I think it's definitely, at least this is coming from my opinion and just seeing it as an outside observer, it definitely seems like a genre that's a lot of people are, there's a lot of haters.
Yeah, there's haters everywhere, man. Yeah. They're fucking everywhere.
But I feel like with this genre in specific, especially with, you know, as this genre still keeps on evolving, it's interesting to watch people try to hold on to, like, this idea of what black metal is supposed to be and not letting it change into something else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's totally stifling. I mean, I definitely know personally, like, I can be called out for doing that to other genres of music that I'm super precious about, but you try to let go of it and then, I don't know, make good music.
Like, I totally understand the perspective. I mean, I remember, like, when I was a teenager, I really disliked deathcore music. I was like, has to be true death metal. Mm. And I still, like, retain that, like, same state of mind.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I'm kind of a hypocrite, I suppose. So, but I do understand that point of view.
Yeah. I think with black metal, that's, like, almost a stereotype of the genre, mm-hmm. where it's, like, totally. To be this true, you know.
There's if we fucking wore spikes and makeup, people would totally treat us differently.
Yeah. There's a lot of like opposite image
true.
So, yeah. You know.
Well, that, and okay, speaking of kind of the, I keep on getting off of the mic here. Speaking of just the sort of the idea behind black metal, kind of similar to what I was talking with Jeff about stoner metal, where it's kind of part of the genre. Mm-hmm. Obviously, black metal has a certain connotation with regards to religion and spirituality. So I was wondering if you guys could kind of speak a little bit about that and how that factors into how you guys write and or if it does.
I'm not religious. I'm an atheist, but I don't think it has any influence over my music.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
For this band? No, not at all.
I don't know. For me, when I do anything in the realm of heavy metal, if I can kind of shoot down Christianity, I'm kind of all about it. Sorry. Relatives and people who like God, but this is my way of getting back at you guys for shoving that shit in my face all the time.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of speaks to the genre a little bit, where it's like that's the other thing about black metal is it's also somewhat nihilist and somewhat kind of like it sort of sees the world as like this kind of void of non-meaning.
And yes, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that is sort of something that has been swirling around black metal for a while, and that's why I feel like people have this sort of, or I mean, I think that's why it's kind of scary to people, you know, on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you guys approach sort of the subject matter in your guys' songs? Where is that coming from, and where is the sort of the inspiration for that, and lyrically and thematically coming from?
I'm not really too consistent about like the lyrical content. The last album that I did by myself before it was a full band, which the album's called Take Care, I saw a suicide note on Reddit. It was really sad. I don't remember all the details, but I wrote all the lyrics of Take Care regarding that. It was revolving around that story. So, and then Into the Gray, it was completely just different. Not like a... Well, that, I guess, Take Care is in fiction, but I don't know what I'm saying. But yeah, it's not really too consistent. I don't, like, for instance, I don't plan, I don't have anything in mind of what I'm going to write lyrically for the next album yet. I'm coming up with that still.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What was your song? Your song was kind of more like futuristic for The Day That Stole the World.
The Morning That Killed
the World. I always call it that Tom Cruise movie. It just sounds like awesome.
Yeah.
I still refer to songs that our band writes as like our demo names. I can never remember the actual names of the songs.
I don't know. The music definitely guides the words when I'm writing. But I guess the two songs I wrote about were just a lot about just confusion and kind of like the brain tricking itself.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
That's definitely, I feel like, definitely something that I think any artist can relate to. And especially, I mean, I know I relate to it just because every time I try to sit down and write a song, I'm like constantly second guessing everything and constantly like, oh, okay, how does this fit? You know, but then that kind of brings me to the next kind of overarching question that I like to ask is that as you guys are compiling things together and really sitting down to formulate what the songs are going to sound like as a band, how do you guys approach that? How are you guys taking these ideas and starting to work with them as a whole rather than just individual parts?
I think me and Alex write our parts individually and then we'll jam them with Deacon. And just over time, we don't like really discuss them. Well, maybe like some parts here and there, but we don't like have we don't like write down on a whiteboard.
You're talking about writing new songs?
No, like, yeah.
or just kind of like formulating them into the songs rather than just ideas.
Yeah. Like we write all the guitar stuff prior. So that's all like me and Alex are like working on that together. And then with Deacon, he'll just kind of.
You guys kind of write everything because when I get the tracks, they're done except for vocals.
Mm-hmm.
We'll program,
I'm lucky.
We'll program
lucky.
Like basic drum ideas.
Oh, okay.
To just sick get drum across ideas. The field, and then but Deacon always expands on them and puts like crazy fills.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I have to really do that cool. because some of the patterns that I get in the initial demos, I'm like, man, I can't fucking play that, dude. Come on now.
I do that same thing whenever I write stuff with fake drums.
There's yeah. no.
I'm already dying back there the whole time.
Yeah, that's true. It's definitely like a almost like running a marathon on the drums when you're playing like this type of music with constant double bass and constant blast beats.
Yeah, I love it. It's a challenge. That was one thing that made me want to be a part of this band too, because I had never played anything to this caliber of like drumming and like really long songs that are like 200 BPM yeah. the whole way through, like four songs in a row, you know, no break from it. And just like, yeah, I want to try to do this. And I had to learn how to do it because I couldn't play this music when I first like auditioned for the band. I like knew one song, kind of.
So as you guys are forming these songs together, one of the other questions I really like to ask is when do you know that you're done? When do you know that the song is final? Like, as you're like, for me, that's the hardest part about songwriting is deciding not to change things anymore.
Yeah, there really isn't a line for me, because like there are some songs that have been released for years, and I still think I should have changed this part, or this or that. I don't know. I don't really have like a system in my mind of how I approach it. But like, I guess maybe if it's like close to like 90% done, when it just seems close enough, then I'll just say it's done, because I know I can always nitpick to find a flaw somewhere.
Yeah
My songs change a lot, like the recent songs we're writing, like there's been like five versions of the last song I wrote.
Yeah.
So I just keep changing riffs like that don't stick until the whole thing just feels complete. You just know when it's done.
Yeah,
I think that is cool with this band, that I like a part of the writing process is it's actually like really personal and intimate. So the songs kind of, we all learn them and do them on our own, which I think doesn't hinder progress from happening, because if you're in a room working on songs with a band and you got like four or five dudes in there and everyone's got an opinion on how something should be, it can actually like stifle the song getting done.
There's no pressure at all.
Yeah, we write music actually pretty fast. We already have enough stuff for a new album.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Just got to record it.
Nice.
And that's cool. These two dudes pump tunes out. Like, they can't play, and they have personal projects on the side, which are just as gnarly, too. Like, we all have so much other music that we make other than this band, true. And we still like are able to do a lot of stuff.
I guess
fast.
That kind of brings up a good idea. How much are you guys taking from these other kind of non like metal sources? How are you guys incorporating the other things that you listen to into this, or are you?
How do I answer this? I don't know. I just try to come up with riffs that I have not written yet, sort of, and like they're not like necessarily inspired by like another band. It's just like I'll just think of a melody in my head and I'll try to tab out that melody.
Okay. You
know?
I guess for the recent stuff, I don't know, I've just been listening to like a lot of random like instrumental hip hop that just paints like a strong kind of like somber mood.
Okay.
And that's kind of like what I was trying to go for on these new songs, was just they all have like a very consistent mood throughout. So
yeah, they're good. The new songs are pretty tight, and it's definitely, you can listen to every album that Nolan Roots has made and they're all like really different.
Yeah.
And this next one's going to be different from Into the Gray. Like there's always a familiar theme, I think, within like the rhythms and the BPMs and the song structures, but we're going to delve into some different genres and kind of like bring them together on the new stuff.
Yeah, this new record is definitely our weirdest one, like the biggest dramatic change in sound.
Yeah, Into the Gray was the same too. Like if you listen to Take Care versus Into the Gray, you can see like how much bigger the universe has gotten, and that's because there's an addition of a couple more people. Yeah. And then we have a bass player.
That's true, yeah.
Trey. Mm-hmm. He's really fucking tight, and it's really nice to actually have a bass player on board too.
Yep. The low end.
Yeah.
The girth. The girth.
So I actually kind of brings up an interesting idea, the idea of mood. So as you guys are kind of creating songs and searching for riffs and sort of trying to develop the mood of the song, how are you guys going about that? How are you guys, what are the certain things that like you're looking for when you're trying to create a specific type of mood?
I like thinking of it like in, I don't know, like elemental ways.
Okay.
I don't know if that sounds dumb, but no. Like, I don't know. I have 3 songs for the new album. So like one of them, I just like relate to like sunniness.
Okay.
And then one of them, I relate to just like water or rain.
Okay.
And then one of them, I just relate to being like gray.
Well, that's kind of, I like that idea, yeah. Because I feel like that's one of the things that, that art, I feel like can bring people to, or like, that's one of the things I don't know. I always try to look at art in a way that's, has sort of like to me, good art is something that really makes a point, but it doesn't have to be a specific, like, here's what I'm trying to say with this art. It's like, I'm trying to think of a good example. A good example would be the Impressionists from Claude Monet, perfect example. Has that, you know, the lily pad, the series of lily pad paintings that are not about anything specifically. They're not like, you know, the Trump billboard that's down the street, yeah. But they're like the, you know, it's just creating an idea, or like a scene of that just fills you with this idea of like a French summer day or spring day out in the French countryside, sitting on a, you know, a lake or a stream, looking at a bridge with some lily pads on. Yeah.
Dude, that sounds like such a better way to write black metal than like using fucking suicide and Satan all the time. Like, yeah. It's been done.
That's true. Well, it's
been done.
And that's what I think is really interesting about this genre, is that I feel like you can also, there's so many different avenues that you can go to keep it fresh and keep it new. Like, to me, one of the things that recently, like a very specific thing that I heard in, it was in Deaf Heaven's last release, and it was the song that has this chord progression that I was like, I've heard that chord progression before, and it's in that Sixpence None the Richer song that was in the Romeo and Juliet movie. And it's just like this design, and it's like, it's funny because it has a very romantic feel to it, which is why they use it in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then, but it fits with that Deaf Heaven song too. And I think it's interesting that like they take that and you know, they're taking ideas from other places and molding them into something. Like, to me, that's the best thing about art, is that it can constantly change, and it can but it can also just as easily stay stagnant. And it's like,
Black metal's pretty crazy with that too, because mm-hmm. it can just like absorb anything. Like, I've been listening to that album Kentucky a lot by Panopticon or anything. It's just, I don't know, it's crazy what you can do with it and what you can blend with it.
And that's the other thing too, is I feel like it's also lyrically too, I know they get a lot of hate, but that band Liturgy from New York,
I like them a lot.
I like them a lot. They're like, I mean, sure, the guy is like, you know, he's got his whole thing going on, but that's still kind of cool. Like, it's like, I like that he sat down and spent the time to create this whole thing around this band and this idea that he had. They also have a tone that's different from same thing. It's like different from a traditional black metal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that I think is kind of weird, and I think about it in all genres in general, but it's like, it's kind of all stolen ideas anyway. Like, I don't mm-hmm. think anyone should be so precious about what black metal should be, or how people should look, or how it should sound, or what it's about, because those dudes didn't invent any of that stuff to begin with. It was all taken from other roots and stuff like that. So being precious about it is kind of counterproductive to progress, which you get a band like Deaf Heaven, and I think that opened up a lot of doors for a lot of people who may not be like in that same limelight. But it just allowed them to be like, hey, you know, we can do this because those guys kind of took the risk and put their asses out there first with this look and this sound and this different way of doing it. And it's really helped out in a lot of different ways for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, someone had to start wearing corpse paint at one point, too. You know what I mean? When someone was like, hey, let's try to look like dead bodies. Like,
unfortunately, it was Kiss. So that sucks. That's
true. Kiss is the original black metal band.
They kind of are. They kind of are, you know? Sucks.
They definitely had a what do we call it, the stage show. That's that they definitely had the stage show for the there's, I mean, they weren't, you know, they didn't have any pigs heads on stakes or on upside down crosses on fire, but they had their they had Ace Frehley on fire.
People got naked at Kiss shows. That's true. Crazy.
So I guess as we're kind of beginning to wrap up here, how do you guys see the landscape changing in terms of, because obviously I feel like black metal has undergone a lot of evolution in the last 10 years, just in terms of like what you guys are doing and kind of this, what you call post black metal and stuff like that. I guess where do you guys see it going from here?
It's hard to comment on other bands' intentions on like how they're gonna try to like form their music, but something that me and Alex have discussed is like trying to not saying like we're gonna try to make this next album like melodic death metal or anything like that, but like kind of incorporate more riffing, because most of our shit is like just pure strumming.
Mm-hmm.
So like just have more like conventional metal riffing in
okay
it. So I mean, at least we'll go down that path maybe, I don't know, in the long run, but I can only comment for us, not for other post black bands or black metal in general.
I mean, yeah, just talking about the genre and whole, like overall, it seems like there's just no limit. Like just exploring Bandcamp, it seems like people who don't even traditionally listen to metal at all like love black metal.
Yeah.
It's really cool that you'll find random electronic artists like doing these really post black metal type screams over their stuff, and it's really fitting and it's really exciting.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've been seeing. Oh, sorry. I'll let you chime in first here.
Oh, really? Okay. I don't know. Where do I see it going? Probably just being heavier and, you know, like you said, riffier. I think we live in a time right now where making art is going to be pretty sweet, because there's a lot of things to kind of flesh out with emotions and things in the world that are happening that just don't really make sense. And kind of just going down that hole, I think it'll push the art to be a little bit more elaborative.
Mm-hmm.
Just so far as exploring the different ways we can do things. And I think we're not definitely traditionalists and really, really precious about the way that it gets done, as long as it gets done and the end result we're happy with, which is what was kind of cool about Into the Gray too, because I think there were two of the songs on that album that we never actually played as a band.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
We recorded them before we even like played them out or practiced them even.
Yeah.
But we were like so involved with making sure every part was perfect as much as we could that the end result got done pretty quick. And yeah, as long as we can keep writing stuff and producing music and not getting bored of doing it, I think it's just going to push it to get heavier and get better.
Yeah.
And find the new avenues, maybe little things in metal. We're like, oh, I forgot I liked that band and that riff, man. We're gonna take this back for a second.
Well, that's always a fun thing to do, is like when you find stuff that you haven't listened to in a long time, and then you go back to it and you're like, oh, I remember why I like this. And then kind of incorporate that. That happens to us all the time.
Sometimes I go back and I'm like, dude, this kind of sucks. Why was I so into this? Definitely. I'll never say that about Slipknot, but other things.
Well, speaking of Slipknot, I think that was kind of what I wanted to say in terms of where I see sort of the black metal and kind of the more extreme metal going, is not in terms of like going towards new metals, but so to speak, but more incorporating somewhat of an electronic element. And because like you said, it's like you're seeing a lot of electronic element, like bands and artists and like noise artists. We were talking about Lana Del Rey's earlier, kind of incorporating this sort of like heaviness and darkness into that style of music. I feel like it can kind of be a two-way street, and that it's going to start, we're going to start seeing a little bit more of like an electronic and more kind of like what Full of Hell is doing, even though I guess you wouldn't really call them black metal, but it's sort of what they're doing with like when they're collaborating with, you know, the body or some other noise artist. And so it's like this weird kind of like melding of those two worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I like to make electronic music. I do a lot of that on the side with other projects personally. And if we can start incorporating that into our music, that would be like the best way to go, because then we can utilize all the soundscapes that you can't really create in analog format, do it digitally, and really like mess with people's heads and put frequencies into the music and like do cool shit like that, you know, from like a sound design outlook. And I think that's another way to push the art form, is not just being like performance and riff driven, but it's like what is the overall experience going to do to you.
Yeah, I definitely see it more becoming a little bit more avant-garde, and like again, kind of going back to the whole idea of like noise and stuff like that, it's definitely a genre where you have to sort of like it's almost like not understanding it is understanding it in a way. Yeah. I know that sounds sort of backwards, but
well, on the pushing and on the Slipknot thing, so they're making a new album. Uh-huh. How fucking pissed would people get if they did a bunch of black metal songs? But they would do them good. Like, they would sound really fucking good, and the riffs would be so heavy, but everybody would be so angry.
Oh yeah, they would be so. Well, that's kind of a weird thing. I feel like with metal, I mean, we've kind of hinted at it the whole time, but like, that people are very precious about what's a good quote unquote band and not what's a bad band, or this band's too mainstream and this one's not, you know, this one's the cool one because no one's ever heard of it or whatever. So it's interesting that like, that's one thing I feel like is also kind of starting to change a little bit. People are a little bit more open and honest about what they like. As I mean, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I'm seeing people become a little bit more open about
they don't feel pressured to just like one type of a thing, one subgenre. There's no real shame in liking totally polar opposite types of music anymore,
exactly,
which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, now that things are kind of shitty out there, people aren't as afraid to put their bad things on the table anymore.
Yeah,
like you have like your super hardcore death metal friend, and he's like, fucking, I was listening to Limp Bizkit yesterday. It's awesome. Like, people aren't afraid just to be, like, completely honest.
I was so big on Limp Bizkit growing up.
They're a good band.
They were.
I still like them.
Break Stuff, that's a hard riff. That's a hard riff. People get stoked for that riff because they know it's, like, about to, like, punch them in the face.
Dude, that is art. If we want to talk about making
art,
dude.
Is it not invoking a feeling?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Give me something to break. That's art. And it will never go away, like... You know, we could talk about the music that we make or other bands that we're influenced by or really love, but like, there's a band that, you know, Limp Bizkit and Give Me Something to Break, like, that will go down in time. Everybody anywhere that was ever exposed to that at least one time will always remember that shit.
Exactly.
So I guess that's what you try to do when you're an artist, is make that one thing that will matter.
Yeah, or just make something memorable.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll still do it if no one listens to it. We don't care. We can't, quit doing it. We don't know how to quit doing it. But if people do listen to it and like it, that's, like, the coolest part.
Yeah.
If they don't like it, that's kind of cool, too.
Yeah, it's true. It's like a win-win situation.
Yeah, yeah.
I always, it's funny. Like, I always think it's funny that, you know, we all get so caught up in this, like, you know, oh, is it, people going to like this music? Da, da, da. It's like, I try to show my parents the music that, that I make and listen to, and it's like... totally out of their radar of things that even exist. So it's just funny that, you know, it's almost like you have to kind of look back and laugh at it, and like that there's like
it's always funny noticing the things they notice when you show them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like that there's just sort of this like we put so much make it so precious and so sacred, and then but the rest of the world is like, what is this noise?
Yeah, my dad's a musician and a drummer, and you know, I sent him the new album and stuff, and he's like, oh, that's really fast. You're doing really good. Hey, do you think you should try playing jazz? If you can play that, you could probably be a gigging drummer somewhere in Phoenix just doing some jazz.
Yeah.
I'm like, why did you listen to that fucking album? Why would I make jazz? With totally outside opinion, knows nothing about black metal, doesn't give a fuck about black metal. Total goth dude, but
my parents surprisingly actually like this band.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. I think they just like the clean parts though. Mm. But yeah. It's a refreshing because they've never liked any other band I played in. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure my mom would dig it. She just hasn't checked it out yet.
It's funny because it's like it's also such a generational thing, and like how I don't know, I can't really speak for anyone's parents or my parents for that matter, but I definitely feel like there's a sort of like sense of like the things that we think are just sort of like banal are mm-hmm. are so foreign to them, and so like it's like horror movies now, where it's like, you know, a horror movie in the 70s or whatever was like The Exorcist, which was like the oh my gosh, did you see your head spin around and spit you know, really fake looking pea soup, and then now we've got like I don't know what Saw. Eli Roth like chopping people's heads off and stuff.
Yeah,
and like so it's such an interesting evolution of how these genres can like continue to push the boundaries, and like and I think that goes back to like what we were talking about earlier, where it's like if a genre doesn't have that ability to progress, it like just it stays stagnant and it becomes kind of boring.
Yeah, I think I was like watching a Gore Goth documentary, and there's a part where they're talking to Gall, and he is just like, you know, what the interviewer asked him something about music, and he was like referencing it to society, and he was like, you know, if there was equality in society, that would be awful. He's like, equality is actually the most, it's the worst thing that can happen because it creates stagnation. And when things get stagnant, they don't progress anymore. They're just boring. He's like, I don't want any of the art or anything. There is no equality. I don't want it to be there. We need to have this struggle that is happening, because if there isn't like any type of struggle, then it won't change. It'll just be, it'll get comfortable.
Yeah. And I feel like that's true. It's like every art is meant to tell a story, and it's like, what kind of story is like, well, everything's just great now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like wine. Wine is one of those things, you know, you only get good wine when the grapes like really hurt.
Yeah.
You know, you don't feed them and you beat the shit out of them, and then all of a sudden you get like this awesome wine. And art is the same way. It's like a direct reflection. Like, it has to go through some bad times for it to, you know, get better and to change, you know?
So let's kind of switch gears a little bit here. As we're, again, kind of wrapping up, so you guys self-released most of this music, and then recently you guys put out Into the Grey on Prosthetic. How did you guys, I think this kind of, I guess as far as like people who are looking to start working with label, like I know a lot of people self-release music now, and because it's very, there's so many opportunities for it, but there's still like labels and things out there supporting artists and stuff. So how did you guys get involved with Prosthetic?
Word of mouth. We got a recommendation from somebody and they liked it and they offered us a deal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was super fast. Actually.
Yeah. It was really, really easy. It was like the second label we tried, we even shot it to. And then that was it, that we got signed from them.
Nice. Yeah. And have they been like, how have they kind of been a part of your process or have they? Are they kind of hands off? Are they
like in the writing process?
Yeah, in the right. Like,
oh, they've been totally hands off of that so far, at least.
Yeah,
yeah. It's actually kind of awesome. All they want to do is they put the album out. We basically handed them a finished product, and
really
they had to do just some of the formatting for the vinyl and CD, and that's all they do. And it's kind of cool because I think there's a lot of bands that look for a label to, you know, give them a tour manager and to like put them out there and to like print their merch and do all this stuff. And it's kind of like, I think it hinders a band from becoming a good band when they don't have to do any of that.
That's
shit.
That's true. Yeah.
So we handle everything, and they just basically fortunately are like, hey, we like that. We're going to pay for it.
Nice.
And that's that.
Sweet.
It's real easy. They're going to do that for two more albums. Thank you, Prosthetic.
Well, so
appreciate it.
Let's talk a little bit about what you guys have coming up here. So you guys have kind of mentioned a couple times that you have songs, it sounds like you guys are getting ready to put out another full length.
Yes, we have at least guitar-wise, we have a whole new album written, or at least like 95% done.
Yeah.
Like, he's got some riffs to iron out, but it's pretty much done.
Nice.
Couple transitions.
Yeah,
it's done.
Yeah, me and Trey will probably get together and try to hash out some of the rhythm section stuff and really get that together. Still deciding how we want to record this, because Into the Grey was done. I did the drums with Jalapaz at Audio Confusion, but then Alex and Cameron basically did everything in-house, and then we sent it off to Jack Shirley at Atomic Garden, which was fucking so sick that he wanted to put his hand on our album, and that was through a recommendation from a friend,
Nice.
And I know other guys that worked with him, and it wasn't even in rock and or in death metal, it was just in rock and roll, but I don't know. We got to figure out how we want to do this next one again. I know we'll probably do a lot of the guitar stuff in-house, and then we're going to try to do everything else actually in a studio this time and try to get some of that really like big engineering sound. So,
Well, I have to say, I mean, for even though it's in the box, your prior stuff sounds really good. And I think that speaks to the not only your guys' talent as musicians, but also just the fact that people have these tools available to them now. Or you know, they don't necessarily have to go to a studio to get music made.
Right.
Yeah.
What sort of tools are you guys using to create and just tone wise and for all the gear nerds out there?
Well, this will make me sound like quite a amateur, but what I used for all the albums before, when it was a solo project, was a Line 6 tone port. Mm. That's it.
Wow.
And Superior Drummer.
Nice.
Yeah. It's pretty easy. And I, very little experience with mixing. I was learning how to mix and master as I was making these albums. So, like, I didn't go into it with the knowledge already in my mind. I was learning as I was making these albums.
That's part of the fun, I feel like.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah.
Well, the thing you don't talk about, though, and like I can say for Cameron and Alex, is they have a really good ear for how things should sound. And I don't think like that's something you can learn that. But people who actually like have that naturally to be able to like focus all the frequencies into their brain to be like, this sounds right or it doesn't. Like, you guys got a really good ear. And I think that's why it sounds the way it sounds sometimes, too.
Thank you.
Just being able to hear the mix and hear the way tones are and stuff like that. Like you can't, that's why a lot of people go to engineers and studio people is because they don't have that ear. So,
Well, can you guys speak to working with, I mean, even though you guys were still doing a lot of stuff kind of in the box and in house, can you guys speak to a little bit to working with Jalapaz or with an engineer also from the mixing front too, versus doing it yourself?
Sorry, what was the question?
If you could kind of like talk a little bit about the differences between working with like engineers and having to sort of communicate your ideas to them versus doing it yourself.
It was pretty refreshing to have Jack Shirley mix it because he has a full-fledged studio. I just have stock plugins on Cubase, so I'm extremely limited. So all the mixes we got back from him, like I wouldn't have been able to achieve myself with very limited plugins and shit like that. So it was good outsourcing that.
Yeah. It's good finding people that you just trust. So like you give it to Jack Shirley and he's going to make it sound good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the thing. It was just like, we were sitting around like, okay, we have this album recorded. We have everything ready. Like, how are we going to put this out there? And, like, I don't know. We just started emailing dudes who we like their records.
Yeah.
And big dudes. And Jack was like one of the first ones. I was like, yeah, that's cool. I'll do it.
Nice.
You're like, really? Really? All right, cool.
Well, it's also kind of nice to have. I mean, I know from my experience, because so our band, we self-released our first two. Well, we had the very, very first demo that we did. We had someone record it. And then the second two 7-inches that we did everything ourselves except for the drums where we recorded with Ryan Butler at Arcane Digital.
Yeah.
But one of the issues that we ran into was that same sort of thing, kind of going back to the idea of when do you know you're done, is we would sit there and we were nitpicking and like, and finding every, like changing this and changing that. And it was like, it seemed like this never ending process but finally when we were done, we're like, oh God. For our most recent record, it hasn't come out quite yet.
It's a good fucking record.
We did everything tracking and mixing and everything at a studio, and it, so to me, it was such a better process because it allowed us to like take some of the weight off your shoulders and like focus on specific parts, or like you get a little bit of a break from it, because I feel like sometimes you can sort of drive yourself insane just like, okay, why does this sound like garbage? And then you like hear it and then you're like, okay, it sounds good now. And then you listen to it 800 more times. You're like, I don't know anything anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably nice to not have that responsibility.
Yeah. Every time like I'm either writing music or mixing, sometimes like it just depends on my mood. Like sometimes I'll think, nice, this shit sounds good. And sometimes it's like, this is fucking awful. Mm. And it could be something completely exterior from just the guitar writing, like something earlier that day or something.
Yeah.
And then that will influence me later. And it could make me think everything I write is either good or bad. So that's beneficial and not at the same time.
Yeah. I feel like it's finding that balance. Like,
yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like, if you go from recording like directly into the mixing process too, it's almost like there's this weird fatigue that happens.
Yeah.
And you can't really hear how good the song can be or the potential of it because you're already fucking over it.
Yeah. Or you're just too attached to it.
Yeah, there's something that happens. So I understand why bands sometimes take like a break. Like they'll record and then they'll take like 2 months off.
Yeah.
and then go back and then like start mixing or doing stuff. Our producers do that too, you know, especially like some of the really big guys. They'll like record an album and either knock it out immediately or take months off and then go back and mix it. Yeah. I think when we did Voices too, mixing that with Alex, he did that at Elmwood Studios in Texas. So we were kind of like communicating through Messenger on sending files back and forth, you know, on the mix and stuff until we got it right, which ended up taking longer than it probably would have if we were actually in the room or there.
But I mean, at least there's now that's another thing that's available to us now. It's like you used to have to be in the room, and now it's just like you can, you know, hit up your favorite mixing engineer on Facebook and be like, hey,
fucking check these waves, bro. I'm sending you the waves.
Well, I think that's a good spot to kind of wrap it up. What's next for you guys, aside from the aforementioned album?
That does take up quite a bit of our planning. We're going to record that pretty soon. But aside from that, we're just playing shows.
Hopefully going to tour.
Just playing shows in the area. And then like we're planning maybe to tour in the summer, maybe, or sometime.
Right. Check it out. If you want us to play shows, ask us to play shows. If you want us to go on tour, you should ask us to go on tour. We're pretty available.
Yeah. So if people want to check you guys out, what's the best way to find your guys' music? I mean, obviously there's
the band.
Bandcamp.
Bandcamp is our main one, but we're really easy to find on the internet. You can just type in our name on Google. No one else has the name Knowling Roots, so all of our shit comes up first, so it's really easy to find us.
Nice.
Bandcamp is our main spot, though.
Nice. Yeah, Prosthetic Wet Records website, too. Yeah,
check it out. Mm-hmm.
Got some stuff up there.
Very nice. Well, so the last question I always like to ask is, we kind of touched upon it a little bit earlier, but as you guys are, you know, creating and absorbing art from the, you know, from other artists and things like that, I guess I just want to ask each of you guys, what do you think constitutes great art? Like what is something that makes art great? Not something that's just like that art is like, you know, or something that you stick up on a fridge or something like that, but what's something that where you look at it or you hear it or you experience it in some way where you're like, oh, that's what art is supposed to be.
Yeah. I think it's like totally subjective on the person. So like, I mean, our music is complete shit to some people, but it's like good to other people. So it like really anything could be amazing to someone, even if someone could think it's objectively bad. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's just if some like percentage of people really dig it, then I guess it's good to them subjectively.
Yeah. I guess the art I'm always attracted to is stuff that's very like personal and vulnerable. It seems like the person is just like, they have no intentions to make it other than the fact that they just kind of have to.
I don't know. These days I've been looking at pretty much like every single movement of the human being is art.
Hmm.
Like, no matter if you're, like, a self-actualized artist or you're just some dude doing construction, like, every movement of your day is kind of artistic. So,
sort of like the entire human experience is art.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm going to try to switch it up and not be so dark and critical about what I think art is and be like, dude, everything is art.
Mm. I suppose that's true. So, like, everything, every sort of creation has some kind of validation to it. You know, like, it's what I like to think about it is that, like, as an artist, you're sort of manifesting something, just taking something from being an idea and manifesting it into an actual thing that other people can experience. And I think that's, to me, like what is interesting about that, because it's like, you know, yeah, no one thinks of a construction worker as an artist, but that person still has to create a huge structure or like be a part of a collaborative art process that some architect designed somewhere.
Hell yeah, the art of putting a hammer to a nail without crushing your finger like thousands of times in a day. I mean, it's just a different art.
Right. It's well, art. Thank you guys for coming in. This was a fun one.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the
gelada.
Gelada. All right, hold on. Can I try this?
Yeah, try it.
All right.
It's surprisingly spicy.
I think probably just an Arizona thing, right? Like we wouldn't find this in.
I've seen those in California.
With tamarindo picante?
I don't remember all that.
All right. Well, this one has tamarindo picante. I'm checking it real quick. I fucking hate beer mixers too. Like I hate this shit.
Beer. It's actually pretty. I've been drinking it the whole time, so.
That's good.
It's pretty good.
That's fucking good.
A little spicy.
A little chipotle.
This episode brought to you by Modelo.
By Modelo.
All right. Well, I think that's a good spot to wrap it up. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you. Hey, thank you.
All right. Thanks again to Cameron, Alex, and Deacon for stopping by and for the chelada. Be sure to check out their newest record, Into the Gray, on Prosthetic Records, as well as their prolific back catalog. You can find that on Bandcamp or Spotify or wherever you listen to heavy music. Also, if you're liking the podcast, feel free to follow us on Twitter at ArtIsHardPod and Facebook and Instagram at ArtIsHardPodcast. And then feel free to rate and review the show if you want on iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast, or just tell a friend, you know. That's it for this week. So until next time, see you.